Proverbs 13:20. Walk with the wise and become wise. Associate with fools and get in trouble. Proverbs 17:17. A friend is always loyal, and a brother is born to help in time of need. Proverbs 18:24. There are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. Proverbs 27:4-6. Anger is cruel, and wrath is like a flood, but jealousy is even more dangerous. An open rebuke is better than hidden love. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. Proverbs 27:9-10. The heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense. Never abandon a friend, either yours or your father's. When disaster strikes, you won't have to ask your brother for assistance. It is better to go to a neighbor than to a brother who lives far away. In Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. This is God's word.
Now may the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. So this year we are studying wisdom literature here at Mission, and it's a unique literature type, and I just had an experience of how confusing it can be. I was in a Zoom classroom this last week, and there was a professor talking about Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Now, we talked about that here at Mission over Easter. But he talked about the moment where Jesus said, if you look at someone with lust in your heart or say, you know, it's like you've committed adultery with them, or if you say you're a fool to them, it's as if you've committed murder. And the professor said, perhaps a little bit flippantly, but he said, we know Jesus didn't really mean that, right? And this guy in the class kind of like, you know, had a little bit of a revulsion moment and, you know, raised his Zoom hand and wanted to talk about that. And the professor said, okay, yeah, I mean, he meant you to hear that, he meant you to think about it, but the Old Testament law is really clear that it is indeed worse to kill somebody than to call them a fool. It is worse. It's not good to call somebody a fool. You're on the path to murder. But if you had to choose, right, you don't kill the person. That's definitely a worse thing to do, right? Same goes for adultery. Does this need to be explained? Okay. Yeah, like if you see somebody, you're like, they're cute. Do not continue to have adultery with them because you've already done it. You know, that is where you stop because it is definitely worse. Okay. So this can send people into all sorts of dark holes, right? Religious and irreligious, because it's like, well, if Jesus says things he doesn't totally mean, then why listen to Jesus? You know, why listen to something that isn't exactly the way that it's said somewhere else in the Bible? Does Jesus make the Old Testament obsolete? Is Jesus more harsh than the Old Testament? That's kind of how it feels there, right? If you've even looked at your fool friend, if you've looked at a friend and you thought, what a dummy. Are you just, you know, are you a murderer? So to face these issues with a little more clarity, it helps to understand that Jesus' Sermon on the Mount is what we call wisdom literature. It's a wisdom teaching. And in ancient cultures, that was a common way to teach. And wisdom literature uses strategies, linguistic devices to get us thinking, talking, and wrestling with concepts so that the end of that process, we end up learning and becoming more wise and representing God's kingdom in the world. So if you've wrestled with that seemingly harsh statement that to say you fool is as if you've murdered them, and you start to realize that the core of murder is indeed to think low of a person as if they're not as valuable as you ought to think, that wrestling match gets you to think about how serious it is, not only that you don't hurt people physically, but how you think of them. It doesn't need to mean killing people is the same exactly. It gets you to wrestle. So in that text, Jesus used something called hyperbole, an intentional exaggeration to make a point. That's what he did. And then you process that statement and you think, Perhaps he's saying that we can't achieve innocence by merely restraining ourselves from evil. Perhaps we need to cultivate a life that actually changes how we feel about people. That'd be a great outcome of wrestling with that text. So, typically, engaging in wisdom literature involves discussing, processing, and in fact, discussion with other voices, storytelling. It involves all those kind of things. It's a group exercise as opposed to something you do alone. So most weeks here at Mission for the year, we've tried to include another voice. Sometimes it's interaction with the whole group. Sometimes it's a voice of somebody who's going to come up here and share. And today, our topic is friendship, which is something you definitely cannot do alone, and which I spent a lot more time immersing myself in within this last year than almost any other topic. I've got two friends that I'll mention today who are here, or three I'll mention. One is here now. One is going to be here, we think. So the first is my buddy Pike over here. So that's Pike. The other is Sean Hunter, who some of you know, who was a big part of founding this church. And Sean had a exploding oil filter earlier today. So he's on his way. And so, at some point, hopefully about the time I'm ready for him, he'll just walk right up here and the timing will be perfect. The other one I'm going to mention is my buddy from grade school, Jimmy. So I went on this road trip, this 4,000-mile total road trip. Pike is the one that was with me all 4,000 miles, and he's still hanging out with me, so that's positive. We took this 1971 Volkswagen Super Beetle. Sean rode with me in the car most of the time. Pike trailed in our Highlander, and then on the way home, we ended up towing the car with the Highlander, so we got to hang out a little bit more. Pike's been one of my best friends since high school. We met freshman year, and the whole journey of doing this was for me to process the idea of friendship. Proverbs 13:20, which we opened with, is a parallelism, one of those linguistic devices. And it makes a statement, the first statement it makes is this: walk with the wise and become wise. And in the day of the proverb, to walk with somebody was to take a long trip. That's how you would travel between town to town. And so in a sense, about almost exactly 1 year ago, as Pike and I were just discussing, which is wild, this was not the plan of this topic, but it was actually this weekend, 1 year ago, we set out on a trip together to explore the idea of friendship. So I'm going to start by giving you a little bit of background on that trip. Then I'm going to show you some of the lessons that I learned and how they relate to some of these proverbs. So this trip is going to be a lens through which we look at the proverbs today. I want to talk about a little bit of the results of the trip, and that's where we hope Sean walks in the door just on time, because he's going to chip into that, unless he doesn't. And then I want to tie that into faith in Jesus specifically, how this theme of friendship can inform our relationship with Jesus. So I hope it's helpful. I hope that my little journey into friendship a year ago with Pike and Sean and others, some of others who are here were with us too. You'll see a group photo with others in it. And I hope it's helpful. I hope it helps you think about your friendships as well. So here's why I went on the trip. In June of this year, it was the 20-year marker of the loss of our, Pike and I. This would have been my best friend from sixth grade on, a close friend of Pike's, Sam Zawada, and his beautiful fiance, Valerie. They were traveling to Tucson for their wedding. Many of you have heard this from me before. But they died really tragically on the roadside in New Mexico when they rolled their vehicle early in the morning. So that's been almost exactly, 20 years in June since that happened. And for so many reasons, that disrupted friendship for me. I mean, clearly my best friend who I was preparing to be his best man, right, that weekend, is gone. And that's not something you expect in your early to mid-20s. But also, there was more to it than that, because Sam was the kind of friend that brought friends together. He connected people. He was a very outgoing person. And so to lose that kind of person meant that rally cry doesn't happen from anybody. That person who says, hey, you and you, let's go there, let's do this together. When that person's not doing that role, it changes things. We were also at a point in our lives where we were in our mid-20s, things like career, getting married, stuff like that was happening. Pike had followed Brandy over here to Oklahoma, and so he was not in Tucson anymore. And that all just contributed to a life feeling very different for me, and especially in the department of friendship. And I began to really miss that experience of having a friend around, like a really close friend nearby and really involved in my life. And then I got to know Sean. So that's Sean in our previous church building when we were getting ready to move into there. And Sean and I had a lot in common. C.S. Lewis says, a friend is somebody who you look next to you and you realize there's a connection. And you say, you too, you like this too, you do that too. And Sean and I had a long list of that stuff, such as honestly, we kind of dressed the same. We like did the same kind of hobbies. The music we liked at least was similar. We both were down to dumpster dive, definitely a lot of thrifting. And we were both Christians and we wanted to have relationships that helped lead people to Jesus. There were just a lot of those U2 moments with Sean. And so we started doing stuff together. I remember I hired him for a project. We started working together. He'd come over to the church I was working at. Not too long after that, Michaela and I were moving, and he and his wife Jocelyn helped us move, and they noticed the house across the street was for sale, so they bought it. And a lot of this story has to do with how at least I am tied to this thing called Mission Church, because we started talking with some other friends about starting a church in town. We started a church in the backyard of a neighbor down our street. And it was like eight of us, Shauna, Jocelyn, Michaela, and I. We were like kind of the core of that, along with Andrew Brown. Sarah Brown wasn't around yet at that time, and Brandon and Kira Brown, who have now moved to Seattle. Sean and I started a company together somewhere in there, and at some point you started realizing, like, I think for Sean and I was like, we are around each other more than we're around our wives. Like, we are in this shop like every day, and then we're doing church, and then, you know, we go home, and every once in a while I think our wives would be like, why are you two going outside and working in the driveway right now? Michaela, would that be accurate? Yeah, pretty accurate. So So it was like all of a sudden in later life, I was like, whoa, okay, I got a really maybe like this new kind of best friend growing up in my midlife. This is pretty cool. Now, if any of you have lived through the last 10 years, have any of you? I think so. Yeah, you've lived through that. Okay, I assume so, being here, unless you skipped it somehow. Culturally, it's been rough, right? It's been a lot of shuffling in culture that's happened in the last 10 years. There's data on this. It's affected churches, families, national identity. Things have fractured over social issues, political issues. It's just been a time of great change. And one of the areas that has impacted deeply, and this isn't just my story, it is my story, but it's affected friendship. There's a huge uptick in broken friendships and a lack of close relationships that's happened in the last 10 years, especially between men. It's true, men and women, but even more among men. And that fracturing happened. It happened here, right? It happened in this room. And it happened to Sean and I. It's sad to say that for a couple years after a period in there, we talked about only things that needed to be talked about because we'd owned a business together. And it wasn't like it wasn't like mad, but that's just the only time we would end up talking. And in that same window, I'd lost my dad, and I'd gone and done this travel memoir on my dad, and I was encouraged that maybe I should think about my friend Sam in light of that. And immediately when I was encouraged to do that, I thought I knew what I would do. I would drive a Volkswagen Bug to Wrigley Field and write a story about friendship, somehow in 30 seconds. I knew that, but I immediately knew, too, I wouldn't just talk about Sam. I would talk about the other friendships that changed, including my relationship with Sean. Now, the goal of all that, to me, was to deep dive and learn how friendships happen, how they come to be, how they change, how to grieve them when they change, because they do. And we don't really have an avenue to grieve that. Like, you know, if someone dies, you have a funeral. If your friend moves away, what do you do? Right? Or if your friend turns out to not really relate to you anymore, we don't really have a ceremony for that, right? I wanted to think about how friendship could be repaired or worked on. And I thought a story of a friend I'd lost so young with Sam, paired with the iconic, you know, Volkswagen Beetle and Wrigley Field and the Cubs might be a story that some people might read. It could be kind of a Trojan horse for people to open up a book that seems to be just about baseball and road trips and start grappling with questions of their faith, the fracturing of our culture, and really like the difficulty of friendship. So hopefully, you know, when my memoir gets out there, people will find it a meaningful path to think about those things. But I'm also excited if they read it and they just remember the 2025 Chicago Cubs. That's okay. That's a solid takeaway. So, yeah, the trip happened about this time last year. Here's the group photo. You'll see some faces you recognize in that photo, including people like, you know, Andrew Darian, who's now in Montana, and got good old, you know, Mike and Cruz and Ray and Garrett, who is definitely, he's laughing right now because he's pretty much a pretty committed baseball fan. And you could tell that with Garrett, because in this photo, for whatever reason, I decided to put my fist up. And Garrett thought that's just what people did at baseball games. So he did it too. And people don't do that at baseball games. I just did it. And so Garrett had to realize he'd followed me into meaninglessness. But we went and did the trip. It went really well. I'll tell you a couple things about it as we talk about these proverbs, but that's why I did it. And that's what happened. And we had a great time. Even Pike, who hates baseball, had a good time, I think. Yeah, generally. He said that was the only time he's going, but it worked. It was all right. So that's what happened. And let me tell you what I learned. So Proverbs 12, 25 to 26 says, worry weighs a person down. An encouraging word cheers a person up. The godly give good advice to their friends, and the wicked lead them astray. And I want to draw out of this proverb the idea of leading each other in a friendship, leading each other. So one of the biggest surprises to me on this trip had to do with roles and equality. It was one of the biggest surprises. And what do I mean by that? I look back on my childhood friendships, and I think about meeting Sam. Here's Sam in sixth grade in the middle in the, what was that? It was silk shirt, I think, which is bold as a sixth grader to wear silk. And not only was it bold, but Sam would boldly pronounce that it was a feel-me shirt so that women would touch him. And if he were alive today, maybe I wouldn't tell you that. But since he's not, I can tell you whatever I want. So wearing his feel-me shirt so that women would touch him. And then there's me up in that corner, still wearing flannel of some form, right? I actually forgot I still dressed the same back in sixth grade. And the look on my face is still the same, right? Yeah. Nothing's changed. So back when I met Sam, despite my look of, you know, genuine skepticism up there in the corner, I was actually feeling pretty insecure. I was a pretty insecure kid at the time, definitely covering up for that. And so the friendships that I felt compelled towards were the ones that helped me feel more secure. So in grade school, there's a dude named Jimmy. And Jimmy was like impressive. So he seemed like he had it all together. He was strong. He knew how to talk to females. He didn't need a feel-me shirt. He was an emotional feel-me shirt, right? Just he would just look at girls and he would just be like, hi. And they were like, hi, Jimmy. And I was like, how'd you do that? Like, I've been trying to do that by standing near girls. But it doesn't work. And how did you, you know? And in baseball, when Jimmy swung the bat, the ball went over the fence, right? When I swung the bat, the ball went on the ground and maybe out of the infield, maybe. So those two facts led to me to believe that Jimmy was on another level, right? He was strong, could talk to women, could hit homers. I was skinny, only stood near women, young women, and I could only hit line drives on a good day. So I looked up to this young man, right? Jimmy went on to be drafted by the Dodgers. He got hurt in the minor leagues. He was good at baseball. But I looked to him to show me the path, to show me the way. And I don't think he saw himself that way at all. I mean, I've talked to him last year, got together with him a couple times. And when I talked to him about those years, he saw himself as a kid. He saw himself as not having anything together. He saw himself as very scared. And he actually talked to me about how much he felt like my friendship was important to like keeping him together. I didn't see that at all. I saw it completely reversed, right? When Sam came along, back to good old Sam in the Feel Me shirt, I viewed him the same way. He exuded confidence. The first time I met him, he stepped onto the basketball court. And he was like, give me the ball. He had a mullet, which was pretty wild. This is just post-mullet, I think. I think it was the same year. And he just started shooting the basketball and making every shot. His dad taught him Pete Maravich videos. And he just like strutted all over the basketball court. And I felt like I needed somebody like that around. I needed him to cheer me up. When I hear this proverb, worry weighs a person down, but encouraging words cheer people up. I looked to Jimmy and Sam to cheer me up, to make me feel like more confident in myself. On the trip, people kept telling me that they viewed me as confident back when I was in middle school, high school, which is funny. I mean, Jimmy had told me that. Brandy had mentioned that I had everything. I had it all together.
Yeah, you had it all together. You were always ready for every youth lesson. We all thought you were like the one who knew it all.
They thought I was the one who knew it all. And no, yeah, Pike was not under that impression. But I gave off that vibe. And Sean told me that. Sean told me that about even our friendship in adulthood. That's how I came across. Like, I knew what to do. And he would, like, sometimes look to me to tell him, you know, how to do things. And as I've reflected and heard more stories, I've noticed something that friendship often has that kind of thing going on where you're looking to each other. Maybe both people are looking to the other person for something that person can provide. And that has this kind of distinction of roles. I was thinking about my role as a pastor and how it impacted my friendship with Sean. I'm sure it was hard for him to have all those layers of relationship going on because sometimes, you know, I'm exuding confidence, but I also had a role as his pastor. And how did that work? And I think it was hard for him sometimes to show up. And I know this might feel counterintuitive, but I think it was hard for Sean to show up as a friend to me because he thought I had it together. I know that's how it worked with Jimmy. Because back when we were kids, his parents were actually splitting up and he was going through a lot of stuff. And because I thought I needed him so much, I didn't see that he actually needed me. And I didn't show up for him very much because I thought it was one directional. So I think about that with Sean sometimes. I think about that feeling of inferiority that can actually disrupt us being an encouraging friend or leading a friend who needs leading when we think we're the ones that need to be led. I also learned something I see in a few more of these Proverbs. 17:17, a friend is always loyal. A brother is born to help in time of need. Proverbs 18:24, there are friends who destroy each other. Friends, it's in quotes, who destroy each other. But a real friend sticks closer than a brother. 27:4-6, anger is cruel. Wrath is like a flood. Jealousy is even more dangerous. That's like this cascading, growing experience of emotion. An open rebuke, though, is better than hidden love. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. There are friendships that change. I didn't see Jimmy for decades. And there's a sense in which Jimmy was struggling and he was going down a path that I didn't feel comfortable to go down. And it was probably for the best. But he also needed a friend during that time. When I got together with Jimmy at a game at High Corbett Field, I was struck, though, by something. He saw another old buddy from back in the day in the stands when we were there. And he was like, hey, you got to meet my friend Andy. Well, I hadn't seen him in 35 years. We were in the first 15 minutes of seeing each other for and it had been 35 years. And I was struck by the fact that he said, "This is my friend." And I thought, in my mind, we used to be friends, right? But he said, "This is my friend." I wasn't a former friend. And I thought about that, and that's almost become this big thesis for my book in a way, is that friendship can feel, it's always changing. I mean, life situations change, people change, we go through stuff. But a true friend impacts our lives in such a way that that impact never goes away. It never ends. It's not over. And I think sometimes we get really discouraged by the fact that a friendship changes instead of just being grateful that it was a friendship that's impacted our lives. And that's something that Jimmy taught me. There are definitely people who we think are friends who end up not being friends, but sometimes somebody's a friend for a season, and that means they are a friend. They were there for you, and that really matters. But then I also thought about the idea of loyalty. Loyalty. And loyalty isn't always just agreeing, but it's being committed. And sincerity was in that proverb. Sincerity doesn't always make you feel good, but it makes you feel like you can trust. And that's what makes me think of Pike over here. Pike moved away for a long time, but Pike's this loyal type of friend who I think he really sticks by his people. And I think most of his friends will attest to that. I think Brandy would attest to that. And Pike is a sincere guy, which I'd normally like, right? So on our trip, and Pike will probably dispute this afterward if you want to get his side of the story. But we're heading into Denver, and I wanted to go the back way into Denver because I'm driving a 71 Volkswagen Beetle, and I saw all the traffic leading into Denver off the freeway. And I tell Pike at a rest stop, you know, let's go the back way. And Pike's response to that was, "That's stupid." Just says, "That's stupid." And I was like, "Okay, why is that stupid?" And he said, "Because a highway is designed for travel. Like, it makes no sense to go off the designed pathway and go this little back way that's not designed for this kind of travel. It's stupid." And I said, "No, it's not. I'm driving a 1971 Volkswagen. I don't want to drive it in rush hour traffic. This is a way better idea to go on the chill roads that aren't busy." And he was like, "Whatever. I think it's stupid." So it's like, okay, where do we go here? And then Pike, to his credit, he goes, "It's your trip. So if you want to do that, fine." You know? But it's clear he thought it was stupid. And so as we're driving along, Sean and I are driving. And first of all, you know, Sean's kind of like, he's like kind of laughing about all that. And then I said, Pike is definitely cursing my name from the vehicle behind us. He's back because every stoplight, I was like, watch, Pike's like, "We wouldn't be at a stoplight on the freeway. Like, you know, like, what did I tell you?" And then Sean goes, "Do you guys always talk to each other like that?" And I was like, "No, not always." And then I thought, well, yeah, but we have. Like, that's definitely happened a number of times, right? And I know a couple of things about Pike. Number one, I'm going to get his sincerity. Like, he's going to tell me what he really thinks. That he's not going to sugarcoat it. He's not worried about me being hurt or frustrated. Not that he wants to hurt me, but that's not his biggest concern. But I also know that he's really loyal. Like, I'm not, when he gives me his sincerity, I'm not worried that that's going to lead to rejection. Like, I wasn't worried about, like, is Pike going to be good with me tonight if we go my way? No, I know he will give me a hard time if it doesn't go well, but it's not going to be, he's not going to reject me over this. Which, by the way, when you feel like somebody's catering to you so that you won't reject them, that's actually a really difficult experience to deal with. Like, that can feel sometimes manipulative, or it can feel like the relationship's really out of balance. There's something really good about sincerity. So speaking of those roles I mentioned before, you know, Pike and I are super different, and we don't always play the same role. But one of the best things that I've experienced with Pike is there's a sense that we really care about each other, but we don't need each other. Like, I don't feel like I'm letting Pike down the week that I don't see him. I don't think Pike feels like he's letting me down if he tells me he thinks I'm stupid. Clearly, right? But we get to choose each other. And there's a big difference that distinguishes, I think, a good relationship and a relationship that's dysfunctioning. Because I think a relationship that's dysfunctioning turns into a need, like a demand. I need you. I need you to come through for me. And that's not always good. To frame this in kind of Christian language specifically, it would be, we would say something like this. When you've come to a place where you're settled in who God has made you to be, and you know that you can show up in somebody else's life without demanding that they fulfill you, you might be ready for good relationships. That might be a real sign. When you know and receive that, like, God's role in your life is fulfilling enough, you can receive from another person without them meeting your needs. Friendships thrive between people who choose each other but don't have to have something from each other. And as tough as it was for Sean and I and this church years ago, looking back, it feels like we were discovering that we didn't need each other most of all, that we could love each other without having to have each other. And Sean and I talked about that, and it was really, really helpful for us. When I saw these Proverbs too, I thought about something else I learned from traveling with Sean from Proverbs 27, 9-10. The heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense. Never abandon a friend, either yours or your father's. When disaster strikes, you won't have to ask your brother for assistance. It's better to go to a neighbor than to a brother who lives far away. And first off, you know, Sean and I were neighbors. We had that experience of living across the street from each other. And then that time when, like, kind of disaster struck our culture, we lost that. We lost that experience. And we discussed that on the trip. We had a chance to really face that fact. And we talked about it. We talked about how, you know, we had our regrets. I mean, for me, I know I can name that I was so stressed in trying to do a good job of leading church and business during a really stressful time that I missed probably the people who were in front of me. And I think Sean took a real hit there as a friend because I was trying so hard to keep the structures and the edifice working that I missed the humans in the room who were what the structures were all about at the time. And Sean and I talked about that. And I know he has his regrets as well. But we started to make some choices as the years went by choices not to abandon each other. They were little things. A text message of a picture of something at a thrift store, right? Or a car, a weird little car we saw. And then one of the biggest ones was twofold, where Sean invited me to his dad's funeral. And I knew that meant something. And actually, after the funeral, I invited him to go on this trip. And I was kind of surprised that he seemed really, like, really serious about wanting to do it. And that leads to this next idea of being shoulder to shoulder before being face to face. It was almost like Sean and I had to rebuild friendship. Like, we had to go back down to the basics. And I think sometimes learning the basics is what we need to even get into good friendships. So Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. And I think we needed something like a road trip to get us shoulder to shoulder with each other and remember how similar we are. That we could enjoy each other's company, that we, when we Googled which restaurant to stop at in some obscure town in New Mexico, that we were going to be on the same page. Pike's pretty close to that stuff too, except not always. There's some, yeah. But Sean and I realized, like, those little things, like, yeah, we like the same stuff, the same thing that we would see on the roadside that we'd want to take a photo of. It's like, right, we're still really similar, right? We needed the late night movie in an Airbnb. We needed that experience of working together to fix the snapped fan belt on the side of the road. And when we got to the game in Chicago, you know, all 22 of us, as the photo evidences, we sat shoulder to shoulder and had an experience of an amazing baseball game with a dramatic ending, a comeback, walk-off hit in the bottom of the 10th inning, Carson Kelly, a line drive into left field and drove in the winning run. And even Pike got excited. And even Garrett you know, despite not really knowing what was happening. But it was, but everyone's standing right now, so I'll do it as well. And Jim Mullins, a buddy of mine who some of you have met, he's a pastor in Phoenix. He was there too, but he got seats across the ballpark. Actually, strangely, we learned later, the seats of Carson Kelly, the player who hit the ball. They were somehow given to him through a friend. But he sat across from us, and his big takeaway that he actually shared with his church, Redemption Tempe, was that these shoulder-to-shoulder relationships are really important. He said he's seen in his context in Tempe, a lot of college students, a lot of young people, that there's people who just desire close friendship. They want a face-to-face relationship, meaning that they want to look at each other and be seen and be known and be understood and have somebody ask them the really deep, meaningful questions. And they just can't seem to get there. Like, they put too much pressure on it and people walk away and they don't know how to deal with the intensity of what we long for. And Jim's advice, and he said he thought he was experiencing this at the game, was you need to do more shoulder-to-shoulder stuff where you behold something else together, kind of that C.S. Lewis advice, like do something where you can look at each other and like at the game and say, that was awesome. You too? You think so too? You know, or what Sean and I were experiencing in the car, like, yeah, you like that restaurant? Oh, yeah. You think that's cool too? Like, you need those type of experiences to build the level of trust and to kind of build the connection that can lead to a face-to-face relationship. I think the same is true with dating, by the way, for those of you who are thinking about that. You know, sometimes you want that deep relationship. Start simple. Just go do what you love to do and look beside you and see if anybody else is doing that too. And you might find something really meaningful. So what does that have to do with iron sharpens iron? Is anybody wondering? Does anybody care? I don't know. I care. It matters to me. In that proverb 27:17, iron sharpens iron, there's a clever wordplay going on there because it's like two tools, two knives, or two weapons. And the side of a knife in their day that would be sharpened was the face of the knife. It was called the face. And the wordplay here, the genius of the wordplay, is it was talking about a relationship when it becomes a face-to-face relationship, when it becomes a deeper face-to-face relationship where you begin to transform each other. But if you think about that metaphor a little bit, I know this is a weird thought. What's the relationship between two knives generally? Two tools in a toolbox generally? I know that's an obscure question.
They don't interact.
Yeah, to some degree, right? They don't interact, or like their owner or their maker in an ancient time would use them in the normal tasks of life. They would be in the hands of their maker doing the normal tasks of life. So like, you know, the knife that might be used out in the fields or the sword that would be used in battle, they would be side by side in the hands of their maker, you know, doing what they were made to do. And then at some point when they'd been worn down, when their owner or their maker decided it was time, right, they would have that face-to-face experience of sharpening each other. But that's not their normal existence. When it's time. And when you've done things side by side, when you've walked together, when you've worked together, when you've shared life together, when it's time, that face-to-face stuff will happen. And those deeper moments will happen. I think there's a lot to be said in how friendships work when you think about that metaphor. Like, go do things that are meaningful together. Be together. Do things that you believe in. And then look beside you and see who's there and acknowledge them. And then when it's time, that relationship will get deeper and become a face-to-face relationship. And I think even on this trip, Sean and I had experienced that in the past. And we got to re-experience that. By going on the trip together, by having time in the car, doing stuff, we started to have those face-to-face relationships again, those meaningful conversations again. The shoulder-to-shoulder time gave us an opportunity to return to a face-to-face relationship. Proverbs 27:9-10 says, the heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense. And actually, the Greek text adds wine. to that, which might mean an old Hebrew text said that to you. But why? What's that about? Well, perfume and incense are sweet. But if you think about this too, think about in ancient times when you couldn't just go to the store and there was a wall of perfume, or you didn't just go to the, you know, the hippie gypsy on Fourth and there's a wall of incense, right? Back then, it was extremely rare to purchase incense and perfume. This was a scent that was coming from another country that some traveling merchant brings to you. And you love the smell because it's something you can't smell in your country. This is a new and a different and a sweet experience. That's what a friend we trust can offer us when we develop a face-to-face relationship. My famous example of this with Sam was when I could not move on from this girl in high school. I was not moving on at all. And he gave me this analogy. It was probably U of A or Bears football season, I assume. And he said, like, his big thing, I think he kind of yelled at me, if I remember right. He was just getting really annoyed of hearing about this. And he was like, "You're too close to see. You can't see how stupid this is." There's a theme, right, of me being called stupid. And he said, "Okay, football, you're the quarterback. You're about to get sacked." He's like, "But you can't see it because you're on the field and you're looking at the receiver. I'm in the stands. I can see it. You're about to get sacked. Listen to me. Move on," right? He gave me this whole speech. Well, it takes trust to receive something like that as incense and perfume. And what I mean is, like, a perspective outside of your own that smells different, that it's like, this is outside of me and it feels right. It feels true. And I trust that this person's perspective is something I can apply to my life. Sam and I had a lot of trust. So when I heard that from him, it made a big difference to me. It was like perfume and incense. Like, he was offering me something outside of myself that I needed to hear. And our trust led us to have that kind of relationship. The trust that came through thousands of games of basketball, thousands of little arguments about NBA Jam and what kind of sandwich was the best, thousands of bike rides all over the North Side, hundreds, if not thousands, of Nico's burritos. Like, that's what led to my ability to hear him on that topic. So, the effect of the trip. This is where Sean would come forward. I don't see Sean still traveling. So, I think I'm going to just kind of sum this up for you by saying, even though we are remembering a sad story on this trip, we forged new memories together. And my favorite effect of this whole trip was that Sean and I and Pike and I have been spending more time together. That's the simple result. When I got back from the trip, Pike forgot his fireworks in my car, and Sean forgot an entire crate of snacks. And I looked in the back of my car, and I kind of got happy because I was like, sweet. I'm gonna see him in like 2 days. Like, I'm gonna drop off the fireworks and I'm gonna get Sean the snacks. Like, we will see each other again soon. And that's happened. And we have genuinely spent more time together. And that's, I think, been really, really sweet. And I think if anything, I would just say that going out of our way to do something like this together has made that possible. And that is worth it. So to tie in our faith in Jesus here to land the plane, if you're trying to be the friend that encourages and leads somebody, like we talked about at the beginning, if you're going to be the friend that encourages and leads somebody, you're going to lead your friends down the right path. That's good. But you're going to discover, right, that you'll have periods where you do need another person. And sometimes your friend will show up for you in that moment. But other times, your friend will be in need at the exact same time. And they won't be able to show up for you, your friend, your spouse, whatever, right? Sometimes you're both in need at the same time, and you won't have what it takes to fulfill or lead the other person. Sometimes when our friend really needs us, we really need them, and sometimes in different ways. And I think the story of Sean and I years ago was a moment like that. We were both under a lot of duress, and we both had a lot of needs, and we were not able to meet those for each other. When friendship gets to that level of face-to-face relationship, that sharpening experience described in the proverb, that face-to-face sharpening experience is also painful, right? It isn't always easy. By nature, sharpening is like knocking, you know, things are being shaved off. It's painful. And we don't always respond the way that we should to that sort of thing. Sometimes that sharpening pain, at least for a while, can drive us away from each other. Most commentators note that the proverb statement that there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother seems to point beyond mere human relationships. It seems to be something that's possible in a human relationship, but it points beyond a mere human relationship. And then the New Testament presents a surprising development where Jesus comes in, the incarnate Son of God, enters into relationship with people. He gets shoulder to shoulder with people. He's walking around. He's working. He's a carpenter. He's healing. He's teaching. He's doing all this stuff. He gets face to face with people. He enters into relationship with his disciples. That's closer, up close. If you were Peter, James, and John, you got a very deep and meaningful relationship with Jesus. But he didn't just reveal himself to them as leader or savior figure. He actually goes as far as to say to his disciples, "I've called you my friends. I've called you my friends." And when I thought about the worst day that this whole trip brought up to me, that this quest forced me to imagine, when we stopped in New Mexico on the roadside and Michaela and I went back there one more time, and I couldn't help it, during being there, but especially later when I was kind of writing the story, I thought about this moment where his Toyota Tacoma had rolled and the cab was crushed. And I know from the reports that his fiance was gone and he was alive. And he had seen her breathe his last and he knew his wedding would never happen. And he was by himself, right? On the road, on the roadside. And there's nothing I could do. Not only could I not get there, I didn't even know it happened, right? I was asleep. And I couldn't be with him. And the truth be told, when I thought about that, when I was writing this story, I thought, I'm a coward. Like when I see car wrecks, when I see tragic scenes, I have the type of personality that goes, not me. I'm not running over there. I don't know what to do with that chaos. I don't know how to save anybody's life. Like if I go, I'm going like, inching up, I might have been more scared than he was, right? If I had been there at all. There were two guys who pulled over that day, actually, and they ran to the truck, and they knew what to do. They knew what to do. And here's what they did. They did one thing. They just prayed. They just prayed with him. And I think what they exhibited there was that they knew that there was one who was greater and closer to him than they could be. They didn't even know who he was, right? Closer than I could be. That there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. And as they sat with Sam and talked to Jesus, they pointed him to the relationship that was the core relationship for him, the place where he needed to go. And to have that relationship and know how to go there on the hardest day, right? That's the hardest day. The hardest day for them. The hardest day for us. The hardest day to remember. To know where to go on the hardest day, you'll want to be shoulder to shoulder with Jesus up until that day. And sometimes, we want being close to Jesus to be this like really profound experience, right? Where we get just like insight and breakthrough and all kinds of like amazing feelings. And it doesn't usually feel that way. It usually feels kind of mundane, like going to work, just like doing our hobbies, just the normal stuff. But I think that shoulder to shoulder time with Jesus is where we get deeply acquainted and learn to trust him so that on that hardest day, when we've walked with him, when we've traveled with him, we'll be ready to look at him face to face and to receive what he has to offer to us. This table is where we learn how to do that with Jesus. When we see Jesus who, yeah, he's our leader, he's our creator, but he entered into creation on a mission to walk with us, to lead us well, but also to make those who are far off into friends. Well, we learned that he endured the kiss of betrayal from a so-called friend. He knows the pain that can come from broken relationships. But ultimately, he suffered even for the ways we fail to trust in one another and the ways we fail to trust in God. Knowing Jesus as a friend makes it possible to give other people second chances, have mercy upon them and their failures, and to take the risk of moving toward flawed people because we know that we have what we need in him. We have a friend in Jesus. And the question I want us to sit with today is, do we know him as a friend? And how could we cultivate that shoulder-to-shoulder relationship with him until we see him face-to-face? We're going to do three things to close out our time here before we eat dinner together. We're going to have a time of confession. That's a two-minute silence here at Mission. Today, what I want you just to invite you to consider is, do I know Jesus in that way as a friend? You can speak to God in this time. We often encourage you to say what you're really thinking. So just in the silence, if that doesn't make any sense to you, that'd be a great time to say, God, I can't even imagine you as a friend. That'd be a great conversation to have. Just start there. Or if there's something you want to cultivate in that relationship, you could say that. You could talk about feeling hurt or like you don't trust him. That's a good place to do that. Then receive, the practice that we do around the idea of receiving is the Lord's Supper. And here we're approaching Jesus who on the night he was betrayed broke bread and he handed it out to his friends. And he hands it out symbolically to all the friends who would follow after him for years to come. And he said, this is my body broken for you. Every time you do this, remember me. And he's pointing us to remember, you know, the cost that he paid to reconcile us to him. To bring reconciliation in that relationship and the cost he paid to make it possible for us to receive each other and have mercy on each other. Then he says, he takes the cup. He said, this is the blood shed, my blood of a new covenant shed for the forgiveness of many. Every time you drink of it, remember me. I mean, remember, if he can forgive us for all the ways we neglect him as a friend, I mean, gosh, what a list that must be, right? I mean, how many times is Jesus paying attention to me and I'm not really reciprocating? If he can pay that cost, how much more can we give mercy to each other, right? And that's what we want to think about when we receive. We receive mercy from him, and then we can offer. We go back to this table here. Everybody lines up here, takes the Lord's Supper. If you believe this, head on around, and there's a table for thinking about what you can offer. And we have monetary offering back there, as is typical, and we do need that, and it's important for you to consider. But that window back there has a special role too. The window is for you to think about how can you offer, you know, out of the abundance of what Jesus gives us into the relationships in your life. So today, I want you to just think about one action, whether that's a shoulder-to-shoulder action or a face-to-face action you could take to improve a friendship, to reinvest in a friendship that's maybe strained or broken. So there's pens back there. You don't need to put anything that any of us would recognize, but just come up with one action to write back on that glass. Don't worry about writing over the top of things. That's kind of the point. So I'm going to pray for us, and then there will be a two-minute silent time of confession, and then when Mike starts to play, that's the time for the Lord's Supper. And then after that, it's time for dinner, and we'll enjoy that together. So we've got EGs tonight, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for the chance to be together. I know I'm grateful for the trip that I got to go on to think about friendship, and I'm really grateful that it went well, that those who went on the trip had a good time, that the game was awesome, that we were able to really connect with each other and reflect on what all that means, and I consider that a real gift, God. Thank you for giving that to me and allowing me to share it with these people as we consider these words in the Proverbs that were born out of friendships thousands of years ago. So I pray that you would help us to apply this wisdom to our lives, that you would help us to invest in our relationships. And now as we come before you in confession, I pray that you would lead us to think about our relationship with you and how we could invest in it and begin to receive the benefits of you who give us everything that we need. So lead us now as we pray.